snow churning around us like dust on a road, but the arms that gripped me were immovable, like bands of iron, and a rasping voice sounded in my ear. "Stop, or I snap your neck." I knew that voice. It prowled through my nightmares. The Atter. Chapter 26. The Atter had vanished in the moments after Amarantha died, suspected to have fled for the King of Highburn. And if it was here, in the mortal lands? I went pliant in its arms, buying a wisp of time to scan for something, anything to use against it.
"Good," it hissed in my ear. "Now, tell me."
Night exploded around us. The Atter screamed. Screamed as that darkness swallowed us, and I was wrenched from its spindly, hard arms, its nails slicing into my leather. I collided face first with packed, icy snow. I rolled, flipping back, whirling to get my feet under me. The light returned as I rose into a crouch, knife angled. And there was Rhysand, binding the Atter to a snow-shrouded oak with nothing but twisting bands of night, like the ones that had crushed Ianthe's hand. Rhysand's own hands were in his pockets, his face cold and beautiful as death.
"I'd been wondering where you slithered off to."
The Atter panted as it struggled against the bonds. Rhysand merely sent two spears of night shooting into its wings. The Atter shrieked as those spears met flesh and sank deep into the bark behind it.
"Answer my questions and you can crawl back to your master," Rhys said, as if he were inquiring about the weather.
"Whore,"
the Atter spat. Silvery blood leaked from its wings, hissing as it hit the snow. Rhys smiled.
"You forget that I rather enjoy these things."
He lifted a finger. The Atter screamed,
"No!"
Rhys's finger paused.
"I was sent," it panted, "to get her."
My blood went as cold as the woods around us.
"Why?"
Rhys asked with that casual, terrifying calm.
"That was my order. I am not to question the king wants her."
"Why?"
Rhys said again. The Atter began screaming, this time beneath the force of a power I could not see. I flinched.
"Don't know, don't know, don't know."
I believed it.
"Where is the king currently?"
"Highburn."
"Army?"
"Coming soon."
"How large?"
"Endless. We have allies in every territory, all waiting."
Rhys cocked his head as if contemplating what to ask next. But he straightened, and Azrael slammed into the snow, sending it flying like water from a puddle. He'd flown in so silently, I hadn't even heard the beat of his wings. Cassian must have stayed at the house to defend my sisters. There was no kindness on Azrael's face as the snow settled. The immovable mask of the High Lord's Shadow Singer. The Atter began trembling, and I almost felt bad for it as Azrael stalked him. Almost, but didn't. Not when these woods were so close to the chateau, to my sisters. Rhys came to my side as Azrael reached the Atter.
"The next time you try to take her," Rhys said to the Atter, "I kill first, ask questions later."
Azrael caught his eye. Rhys nodded. The siphons atop his scarred hands flickered like rippling blue fire as he reached for the Atter. Before the Atter could scream, it and the Spymaster vanished. I didn't want to think about where they'd go, what Azrael would do.
I hadn't even known Azrael possessed the ability to winnow, or whatever power he'd channeled through his siphons. He'd let Rhys winnow us both in the other day, unless the power was too draining to be used so lightly.
"Will he kill him?"
I said, my puffs of breath uneven.
"No."
I shivered at the raw power glazing his taut body. "We'll use him to send a message to Highburn that if they want to hunt the members of my court, they'll have to do better than that." I started at the claim he'd made of me and at the words.
You knew he was hunting me?
I was curious who wanted to snatch you the first moment you were alone.
I didn't know where to start. So Tamlin was right about my safety, to some degree. It didn't excuse anything. So you never planned to stay with me while I trained. You used me as bait.
Yes, and I'd do it again. You were safe the entire time.
You should have told me. Maybe next time. There will be no next time.
I slammed a hand into his chest, and he staggered back a step from the strength of the blow. I blinked. I'd forgotten. Forgotten that strength in my panic. Just like with the Weaver, I'd forgotten how strong I was.
"Yes, you did," Rhysand snarled,
reading the surprise on my face, that icy calm shattering.
"You forgot that strength. And that you can burn and become darkness and grow claws. You forgot! You stopped fighting!"
He didn't just mean the Adder, or the Weaver. And the rage rose up in me in such a mighty wave that I had no thought in my head but wrath. At myself, what I'd been forced to do, what had been done to me, to him.
"So what if I did?" I hissed, and shoved him again. "So what if I did?"
I went to shove him again, but Rhys winnowed away a few feet. I stormed for him, snow crunching underfoot.
"It's not easy."
The rage ran over me, obliterated me. I lifted my arms to slam my palms into his chest, and he vanished again. He appeared behind me. So close that his breath tickled my ear as he said,
"You have no idea how not easy it is."
I whirled, grappling for him. He vanished before I could strike him, pound him. Rhys appeared across the clearing, chuckling.
"Try harder."
I couldn't fold myself into darkness and pockets, and if I could turn myself into smoke, into air and night and stars, I'd use it to appear right in front of him and smack that smile off his face. I moved, even if it was futile, even as he rippled into darkness, and I hated him for it, for the wings and ability to move like mist on the wind. He appeared a step away, and I pounced, hands out, talons out, and slammed into a tree. He laughed as I bounced back, teeth singing, talons barking as they shredded through wood. But I was already lunging as he vanished, lunging like I could disappear into the folds of the world as well, track him across eternity. And so I did. Time slowed and curled, and I could see the darkness of him turn to smoke and veer, as if it were running for another spot in the clearing. I hurtled for that spot, even as I felt my own lightness, folding my very self into wind and shadow and dust, the looseness of it radiating out of me, all while I aimed for where he was headed. Rhysand appeared, a solid figure in my world of smoke and stars. And his eyes were wide, his mouth split in a grin of wicked delight as I winnowed in front of him and tackled him into the snow. Chapter 27. I panted, sprawled on top of Reese in the snow while he laughed hoarsely.
Don't,
I snarled into his face. Ever. I pushed his rock-hard shoulders, talons curving at my fingertips.
Use me as bait again.
He stopped laughing. I pushed harder, those nails digging in through his leather.
You said I could be a weapon. Teach me to become one. Don't use me like a pawn. And if being one is part of my work for you, then I'm done. Done.
Despite the snow, his body was warm beneath me, and I wasn't sure I'd realized just how much bigger he was until our bodies were flush. Too close. Much, much too close. Reese cocked his head, loosening a chunk of snow clinging to his hair.
Fair enough.
I shoved off him, snow crunching as I backed away. My talons were gone. He hoisted himself up onto his elbows.
Do it again. Show me how you did it.
No.
The candle he'd brought now lay in pieces, half buried under the snow.
I want to go back to the chateau.
I was cold and tired, and he'd... His face turned grave.
I'm sorry.
I wondered how often he said those two words. I didn't care. I waited while he uncoiled to his feet, brushing the snow off him and held out a hand. It wasn't just an offer. You forgot, he'd said.
I had. Why does the King of Highburn want me? Because he knows I can nullify the Cauldron's powers with the book?
Darkness flickered, the only sign of the temper Rhysand had once again leashed.
That's what I'm going to find out.
You stopped fighting.
I'm sorry, he repeated, hand still outstretched.
Let's eat breakfast, then go home.
Valaris isn't my home. I could have sworn hurt flashed in his eyes before he spirited us back to my family's house. Chapter 28. My sisters ate breakfast with Reese and me, Azrael gone to wherever he'd taken the Atter. Cassian had flown off to join him the moment we returned. He'd given Nesta a mocking bow, and she'd given him a vulgar gesture I hadn't realized she knew how to make. Cassian had merely laughed, his eyes snaking over Nesta's ice-blue gown with a predatory intent that, given her hiss of rage, he knew would set her spitting. Then he was gone, leaving my sister on the broad doorstep, her brown-gold hair ruffled by the chill wind stirred by his mighty wings. We brought my sisters to the village to mail our letter, Reese glamoring us so we were invisible while they went into the little shop to post them. After we returned home, our goodbyes were quick. I knew Reese wanted to return to Valaris, if only to learn what the Atter was up to. I'd said as much to Reese while he flew us through the wall, into the warmth of Prithian, then winnowed us to Valaris. Morning mist still twined through the city and the mountains around it. The chill also remained, but not nearly as unforgiving as the cold of the mortal world. Reese left me in the foyer, huffing hot air into my frozen palms, without so much as a goodbye. Hungry again, I found Nuala and Caradwen, and I gobbled down cheese and chive scones while thinking through what I'd seen, what I'd done. Not an hour later, Reese found me in the living room, my feet propped on the couch before the fire, a book in my lap, a cup of rose tea steaming on the low table before me. I stood as he entered, scanning him for any sign of injury. Something tight in my chest eased when I found nothing amiss.
"It's done," he said, dragging a hand through his blue-black hair. "We learned what we needed to."
I braced myself to be shut out, to be told it'd be taken care of, but Rhys added,
"It's up to you, Feyre, to decide how much of our methods you want to know about, what you can handle. What we did to the Adder wasn't pretty."
"I want to know everything," I said. "Take me there."
"The Adder isn't in Valaris. He was in the Hewn City, in the Court of Nightmares, where it took Azrael less than an hour to break him."
I waited for more, and as if deciding I wasn't about to crumple, Rhys stalked closer, until less than a foot of the ornate red carpet lay between us. His boots, usually impeccably polished, that was silver blood speckled on them. Only when I met his gaze did he say, "I'll show you." I knew what he meant and steadied myself, blocking out the murmuring fire and the boots and the lingering cold around my heart. Immediately, I was in that antechamber of his mind, a pocket of memory he'd carved for me. Darkness flowed through me, soft and seductive, echoing up from an abyss of power so great it had no end and no beginning.
"Tell me how you tracked her," Azrael said in the quiet voice that had broken countless enemies.
I, Rhys, leaned against the far wall of the holding cell, arms crossed. Azrael crouched before where the Adder was chained to a chair in the center of the room. A few levels above, the Court of Nightmares reveled on, unaware their High Lord had come.
"I'd have to pay them a visit soon. Remind them who held their leash." "Soon, but not today. Not when Feyre had winnowed. And she was still pissed as hell at me. Rightly so, if I was being honest. But Azrael had learned that a small enemy force had infiltrated the North 2 days ago, and my suspicions were confirmed. Either to get at Tamlin or at me, they wanted her. Maybe for their own experimenting." The Adder let out a low laugh.
"I received word from the king that's where you were. I don't know how he knew. I got the order, flew to the wall as fast as I could."
Azrael's knife was out, balanced on a knee.
"Truth teller, the name stamped in silver Illyrian runes on the scabbard." He'd already learned that the Adder and a few others had been stationed on the outskirts of the Illyrian territory. I was half tempted to dump the Adder in one of the war camps and see what the Illyrians did to it. The Adder's eyes shifted toward me, glowing with a hatred I'd become well accustomed to.
"Good luck trying to keep her, High Lord."
Azrael said,
"Why?"
People often made the mistake of assuming Cassian was the wilder one. The one who couldn't be tamed. But Cassian was all hot temper. Temper that could be used to forge and weld. There was an icy rage in Azrael I had never been able to thaw. In the centuries I'd known him, he'd said little about his life. Those years in his father's keep, locked in darkness. Perhaps the Shadow Singer gift had come to him then. Perhaps he'd taught himself the language of shadow and wind and stone. His half-brothers hadn't been forthcoming either. I knew because I'd met them, asked them, and had shattered their legs when they'd spat on Azrael instead. They'd walked again. Eventually. The Adder said,
"Do you think it is not common knowledge that you took her from Tamlin?"
I knew that already. That had been Azrael's task these days. Monitor the situation with the Spring Court and prepare for our own attack on Highburn. But Tamlin had shut down his borders, sealed them so tightly that even flying overhead at night was impossible, and any ears and eyes Azrael had once possessed in the court had gone deaf and blind.
The king could help you keep her. Consider sparing you if you worked with him.
As the adder spoke, I rummaged through its mind, each thought more vile and hideous than the next. I didn't even know I'd slipped inside, but there, images of the army that had been built, the twin to the one I'd fought against 5 centuries ago, of Highburn's shores full of ships, readying for an assault, of the king, lounging on his throne in his crumbling castle. No sign of Jurian stalking about, or the cauldron. Not a whisper of the book being on their minds. Everything the Adder had confessed was true, and it had no more value. Az looked over his shoulder. The Adder had given him everything. Now it was just babbling to buy time. I pushed off the wall. Break its legs, shred its wings, and dump it off the coast of Highburn. See if it survives. The Adder began thrashing, begging. I paused by the door and said to it, I remember every moment of it. Be grateful I'm letting you live. For now. I hadn't let myself see the memories from under the mountain, of me, of the others, of what it had done to that human girl I'd given Amarantha in Pharaoh's place. I didn't let myself see what it had been like to beat Pharaoh, to torment and torture her. I might have splattered him on the walls, and I needed him to send a message more than I needed my own vengeance. The adder was already screaming beneath truth-teller's honed edge when I left the cell.
Then it was done. I staggered back, spooling myself into my body. Tamlin had closed his borders. What situation with the Spring Court?
None, as of right now. But you know how far Tamlin can be driven to protect what he thinks is his.
The image of paint sliding down the ruined study wall flashed in my mind.
I should have sent more that day, Rhys said with quiet menace.
I snapped up my mental shields. I didn't want to talk about it. Thank you for telling me, I said, and took my book and tea up to my room.
Pharaoh, he said. I didn't stop. I am sorry about deceiving you earlier.
And this, letting me into his mind, a peace offering. I need to write a letter. The letter was quick, simple, but each word was a battle. Not because of my former illiteracy. No, I could now read and write just fine. It was because of the message that Rhys, standing in the foyer, now read. I left of my own free will. I am cared for and safe. I am grateful for all that you did for me, all that you gave me. Please don't come looking for me. I'm not coming back. He swiftly folded it in two, and it vanished.
Are you sure?
Perhaps it would help with whatever situation was going on at the Spring Court. I glanced to the windows beyond him. The mist wreathing the city had wandered off, revealing a bright, cloudless sky. And somehow, my head felt clearer than it had in days. Months. A city lay out there that I had barely observed or cared about. I wanted it. Life,
people. I wanted to see it, feel its rush through my blood, no boundaries, no limits to what I might encounter or do.
I am no one's pet, I said. Reese's face was contemplative, and I wondered if he remembered that he'd told me the same thing once, when I was too lost in my own guilt and despair to understand. What next?
For what it's worth, I did actually want to give you a day of rest.
Don't coddle me.
I'm not.
And I'd hardly call our encounter this morning rest. But you will forgive me if I make assessments based on your current physical condition.
I'll be the person who decides. What about the Book of Breathings?
Once Azriel returns from dealing with the Adder, he's to put his other skill set to use and infiltrate the Mortal Queen's courts to learn where they're keeping it and what their plans might be. And as for the half in Prithian, we'll go to the summer court within a few days if my request to visit is approved. High Lords visiting other courts makes everyone jumpy. We'll deal with the book then.
He shut his mouth, no doubt waiting for me to trudge upstairs to brood and sleep.
Enough. I'd had enough of sleeping. I said, "You told me that this city was better seen at night. Are you all talk, or will you ever bother to show me?"
A low laugh as he looked me over. I didn't recoil from his gaze. When his eyes found mine again, his mouth twisted in a smile so few saw. Real amusement. Perhaps a bit of happiness edged with relief. The male behind the High Lord's mask.
"Dinner," he said. "Tonight. Let's find out if you, Feyre darling, are all talk. Or if you'll allow a Lord of Night to take you out on the town." Amryn came to my room before dinner. Apparently, we were all going out tonight. Downstairs, Cassian and Moor were sniping at each other about whether Cassian could fly faster short distance than Moor could winnow to the same spot. I assumed Azriel was nearby, seeking sanctuary in the shadows. Hopefully he'd gotten some rest after dealing with the Adder, and would rest a bit more before heading into the mortal realm to spy on those queens. Amryn at least knocked this time before entering. Nuala and Caradwen, who had finished setting combs of mother-of-pearl into my hair, took one look at the delicate female and vanished into puffs of smoke.
"Skittish things," Amryn said, her red lips cutting a cruel line.
"Wraiths always are."
"Wraiths?"
I twisted in the seat before the vanity.
"I thought they were high fae."
"Half," Amryn said, surveying my turquoise, cobalt, and white clothes. "Wraiths are nothing but shadow and mist, able to walk through walls, stone, you name it. I don't even want to know how those two were conceived. High fae will stick their cocks anywhere."
I choked on what could have been a laugh or a cough. "They make good spies."
"Why do you think they're now whispering in Azriel's ear that I'm in here?"
"I thought they answered to Reese."
"They answered to both, but they were trained by Azriel first."
"Are they spying on me?"
"No." She frowned at a loose thread in her rain-cloud-colored shirt. Her chin-length dark hair swayed as she lifted her head. "Reese has told them time and again not to, but I don't think Azriel will ever trust me fully. So they're reporting on my movements, and with good reason."
"Why?"
"Why not? I'd be disappointed if Rhysand's spy master didn't keep tabs on me, even go against orders to do so."
"Reese doesn't punish him for disobeying."
Those silver eyes glowed. "The Court of Dreams is founded on three things: to defend,
to honor and to cherish. Were you expecting brute strength and obedience? Many of Risan's top officials have little to no power. He values loyalty, cunning, compassion. And Azrael, despite his disobedience, is acting to defend his court, his people. So no, Risand does not punish that. There are rules, but they're flexible.
What about the tithe?
What tithe?
I stood from the little bench. The tithe, taxes, whatever, twice a year.
There are taxes on city dwellers, but there is no tithe.
She clicked her tongue.
But the High Lord of Spring enacts one.
I didn't want to think about it entirely, not yet. Not with that letter now on its way to him, if not already delivered. So I reached for the small box on the vanity and pulled out her amulet. Here. I handed over the gold and jewel-encrusted thing.
Thank you.
Amryn's brows rose as I dropped it into her waiting palm.
You gave it back.
I didn't realize it was a test.
She set it back into the case. Keep it. There's no magic to it.
I blinked.
You lied? She shrugged, heading for the door. I found it at the bottom of my jewelry box. You needed something to believe you could get out of the prison again.
But Rhys kept looking at it because he gave it to me 200 years ago.
He was probably surprised to see it again and wondered why I'd given it to you. Likely worried why I might have given it to you.
I clenched my teeth, but Amryn was already breezing through the door with a cheerful,
"You're welcome."
Chapter 29. Despite the chill night, every shop was open as we walked through the city. Musicians played in little squares, and the Palace of Thread and Jewels was packed with shoppers and performers, high fae and lesser fairies alike. But we continued past, down to the river itself, the water so smooth that the stars and lights blended on its dark surface like a living ribbon of eternity. The five of them were unhurried as we strolled across one of the wide marble bridges spanning the Sidra, often moving forward or dropping back to chat with one another. From the ornate lanterns that lined either side of the bridge, fey light cast golden shadows on the wings of the three males, gilding the talons at the apex of each. The conversation ranged from the people they knew, matches and teams for sports I'd never heard of. Apparently Amryn was a vicious, obsessive supporter of one. New shops, music they'd heard, clubs they favored. Not a mention of Highburn or the threats we faced. No doubt from secrecy. But I had a feeling it was also because tonight, this time together, they did not want that terrible, hideous presence intruding. As if they were all just ordinary citizens, even Rhys. As if they weren't the most powerful people in this court, maybe in all of Prithian. And no one, absolutely no one on the street balked or paled or ran. Awed, perhaps a little intimidated, but no fear. It was so unusual that I kept silent, merely observing them, their world. The normalcy that they each fought so hard to preserve, that I had once raged against, resented. But there was no place like this in the world, not so serene, so loved by its people and its rulers. The other side of the city was even more crowded, with patrons in finery out to attend the many theaters we passed. I'd never seen a theater before, never seen a play or a concert or a symphony. In our ramshackle village, we'd gotten mummers and minstrels at best.
herds of beggars yowling on makeshift instruments at worst. We strolled along the riverside walkway, past shops and cafes, music spilling from them. And I thought, even as I hung back from the others, my gloved hands stuffed into the pockets of my heavy blue overcoat, that the sounds of it all might have been the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard. The people and the river and the music. The clank of silverware on plates. The scrape of chairs being pulled out and pushed in. The shouts of vendors selling their wares as they ambled past. How much had I missed in these months of despair and numbness? But no longer. The lifeblood of Valaris thrummed through me, and in rare moments of quiet, I could have sworn I heard the clash of the sea clawing at the distant cliffs. Eventually, we entered a small restaurant beside the river, built into the lower level of a two-story building, the whole space bedecked in greens and golds and barely big enough to fit all of us, and three sets of Illyrian wings. But the owner knew them and kissed them each on the cheek, even Rhysand. Well, except for Amren, whom the owner bowed to before she hustled back into her kitchen and bade us sit at the large table that was half in, half out of the open storefront. The starry night was crisp, the wind rustling the potted palms placed with loving care along the riverside walkway railing. No doubt spelled to keep from dying in the winter, just as the warmth of the restaurant kept the chill from disturbing us or any of those dining in the open air at the river's edge. Then the food platters began pouring out, along with the wine and the conversation, and we dined under the stars beside the river. I'd never had such food, warm and rich and savory and spicy, like it filled not only my stomach, but that lingering hole in my chest, too. The owner, a slim, dark-skinned female with lovely brown eyes, was standing behind my chair, chatting with Rhys about the latest shipment of spices that had come to the palaces. "The traders were saying the prices might rise, High Lord, especially if rumors about Highburn Awakening are correct." Down the table, I felt the others' attention slide to us, even as they kept talking. Rhys leaned back in his seat, swirling his goblet of wine.
"We'll find a way to keep the prices from skyrocketing."
"Don't trouble yourself, of course,"
the owner said, wringing her fingers a bit.
"It's just so lovely to have such spices available again now that things are better."
Rhys gave her a gentle smile, the one that made him seem younger.
"I wouldn't be troubling myself, not when I like your cooking so much."
The owner beamed, flushing, and looked to where I'd half twisted in my seat to watch her.
"Is it to your liking?"
The happiness on her face, the satisfaction that only a day of hard work doing something you love could bring, hit me like a stone.
I remembered feeling that way. After painting from morning until night. Once, that was all I had wanted for myself.
I looked to the dishes, then back at her, and said, "I've lived in the mortal realm and lived in other courts, but I've never had food like this. Food that makes me feel awake."
It sounded about as stupid as it felt coming out, but I couldn't think of another way to say it.
But the owner nodded like she understood and squeezed my shoulder.
"Then I'll bring you a special dessert," she said, and strode into her kitchen.
I turned back to my plate, but found Rhysand's eyes on me. His face was softer, more contemplative than I'd ever seen it, his mouth slightly open. I lifted my brows.
"What?"
He gave me a cocky grin and leaned in to hear the story Moore was telling about. I forgot what she was talking about as the owner emerged with a large metal goblet full of dark liquid
and placed it before Amran. Reese's second hadn't touched her plate, but pushed the food around like she might actually be trying to be polite. When she saw the goblet laid before her, she flicked her brows up.
You didn't have to do that.
The owner shrugged her slim shoulders.
It's fresh and hot, and we needed the beast for tomorrow's roast anyway.
I had a horrible feeling I knew what was inside. Amran swirled the goblet, the dark liquid lapping at the sides like wine, then sipped from it.
You spiced it nicely.
Blood gleamed on her teeth. The owner bowed.
No one leaves my place hungry, she said before walking away.
Indeed, I almost asked Moore to roll me out of the restaurant by the time we were done and Reese had paid the tab, despite the owner's protests. My muscles were barking thanks to my earlier training in the mortal forest, and at some point during the meal, every part of me I'd used while tackling Reese into the snow had started to ache. Moore rubbed her stomach in lazy circles as we paused beside the river.
I want to go dancing. I won't be able to fall asleep when I'm this full. Rita's is right up the street.
Dancing. My body groaned in protest, and I glanced about for an ally to shoot down this ridiculous idea. But Azriel said, his eyes wholly on Moore,
I'm in.
Of course you are, Cassian grumbled, frowning at him. Don't you have to be off at dawn?
Moore's frown now mirrored Cassian's, as if she realized where and what he'd be doing tomorrow. She said to Azriel,
We don't have to.
I want to,
Azriel said, holding her gaze long enough that Moore dropped it, twisted toward Cassian, and said,
Will you deign to join us, or do you have plans to ogle your muscles in the mirror?
Cassian snorted, looping his elbow through hers and leading her up the street.
I'll go. For the drinks, you ass, no dancing.
Thank the mother, you nearly shattered my foot the last time you tried.
It was an effort not to stare at Azriel as he watched them head up the steep street, arm in arm and bickering with every step. The shadows gathered around his shoulders like they were indeed whispering to him, shielding him, perhaps. His broad chest expanded with a deep breath that sent them skittering, and then he set into an easy, graceful stroll after them. If Azriel was going with them, then any excuse I might make not to... I turned pleading eyes to Amran, but she'd vanished.
She's getting more blood in the bath to take home with her, Reese said in my ear, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. His chuckle was warm against my neck.
And then she'll be going right to her apartment to gorge herself. I tried not to shudder as I faced him.
Why blood? It doesn't seem polite to ask.
I frowned up at him.
Are you going dancing?
He peered over my shoulder at his friends, who had almost scaled the steep street, some people pausing to greet them.
I'd rather walk home, Reese said at last. It's been a long day.
Moore turned back at the top of the hill, her purple clothes floating around her in the winter wind, and raised a dark gold brow. Reese shook his head, and she waved, followed by short waves from Azriel and Cassian, who'd dropped back to talk with his brother-in-arms. Reese gestured forward.
Shall we? Or are you too cold?
Consuming blood with Amran in the back of the restaurant sounded more appealing. But I shook my head and fell into step beside him as we walked along the river toward the bridge. I drank in the city as greedily as Amran had gobbled down the spiced blood, and I almost stumbled as I spied the glimmer of color across the water. The rainbow of Valaris glowed like a fistful of jewels, as if the paint they used on their houses came alive in the moonlight.
"This is my favorite view in the city," Rhys said, stopping at the metal railing along the river walkway and gazing toward the artist's quarter. "It was my sister's favorite, too. My father used to have to drag her kicking and screaming out of Valaris. She loved it so much."
I fumbled for the right response to the quiet sorrow in those words. But, like a useless fool, I merely asked, "Then why are both your houses on the other side of the river?" I leaned against the railing, watching the reflections of the rainbow wobble on the river surface like bright fishes struggling in the current.
"Because I wanted a quiet street, so I could visit this clamor whenever I wished and then have a home to retreat to.
You could have just reordered the city."
"Why the hell would I change one thing about this place?"
"Isn't that what High Lords do?" My breath clouded in front of me in the brisk night. "Whatever they please?" He studied my face.
"There are a great many things that I wish to do and don't get to."
I hadn't realized how close we were standing. "So when you buy jewelry for Amren, is it to keep yourself in her good graces or because you're together?"
Rhys barked a laugh. "When I was young and stupid, I once invited her to my bed. She laughed herself hoarse. The jewelry is just because I enjoy buying it for a friend who works hard for me and has my back when I need it. Staying in her good graces is an added bonus."
None of it surprised me. "And you didn't marry anyone?"
"So many questions tonight."
I stared at him until he sighed.
"I've had lovers, but I never felt tempted to invite one of them to share a life with me. And I honestly think that if I'd asked, they all would have said no."
"I would have thought they'd be fighting each other to win your hand."
"Like Ianthe. Marrying me means life with a target on your back. And if there were offspring, then a life of knowing they'd be hunted from the moment they were conceived. Everyone knows what happened to my family. And my people know that beyond our borders, we are hated."
I still didn't know the full story, but I asked, "Why? Why are you hated? Why keep the truth of this place secret? It's a shame no one knows about it. What good you do here?"
"There was a time when the Night Court was a court of nightmares and was ruled from the Hewn City. Long ago. But an ancient High Lord had a different vision, and rather than allowing the world to see his territory vulnerable at a time of change, he sealed the borders and staged a coup, eliminating the worst of the courtiers and predators, building Valaris for the dreamers, establishing trade and peace."
His eyes blazed, as if he could peer all the way back in time to see it. With those remarkable gifts of his, it wouldn't surprise me.
"To preserve it," Rhys continued, "he kept it a secret, and so did his offspring and their offspring. There are many spells on the city itself, laid by him and his heirs, that make those who trade here unable to spill our secrets, and grant them adept skills at lying in order to keep the origin of their goods, their ships, hidden from the rest of the world. Rumor has it that ancient High Lord cast his very life's blood upon the stones and river to keep that spell eternal. But along the way, despite his best intentions, darkness grew again. Not as bad as it had once been, but bad enough that there is a permanent divide within my court. We allow the world to see the other half, to fear them, so that they might never guess this place thrives here. And we allow the Court of Nightmares to continue, blind to Valaris's existence because we know that without them, there are some courts and kingdoms that might strike us.
and invade our borders to discover the many, many secrets we've kept from the other High Lords and courts these millennia.
So truly none of the others know? In the other courts?
Not a soul. You will not find it on a single map or mentioned in any book beyond those written here. Perhaps it is our loss to be so contained and isolated, but...
He gestured to the city around us.
My people do not seem to be suffering much for it.
Indeed, they did not. Thanks to Rhys and his inner circle. Are you worried about Az going to the Mortal Lands tomorrow? He tapped a finger against the rail.
Of course I am. But Azrael has infiltrated places far more harrowing than a few mortal courts. He'd find my worrying insulting.
Does he mind what he does? Not the spying, I mean. What he did to the Adder today. Rhys loosed a breath.
It's hard to tell with him. And he'd never tell me. I've witnessed Cassian rip apart opponents and then puke his guts up once the carnage stopped. Sometimes even mourn them. But Azrael... Cassian tries, I try. But I think the only person who ever gets him to admit any sort of feeling is Mor. And that's only when she's pestered him to the point where even his infinite patience has run out.
I smiled a bit. But he and Mor... They never...
That's between them and Cassian. I'm not stupid or arrogant enough to get in the middle of it.
Which I would certainly be if I shoved my nose in their business. We walked in silence across the packed bridge to the other side of the river. My muscles quivered at the steep hills between us and the townhouse. I was about to beg Rhys to fly me home when I caught the strands of music pouring from a group of performers outside a restaurant. My hands slackened at my sides. A reduced version of the symphony I'd heard in a chill dungeon, when I had been so lost to terror and despair that I had hallucinated. Hallucinated as this music poured into my cell and kept me from shattering. And once more, the beauty of it hit me. The layering and swaying, the joy and peace. They had never played a piece like it under the mountain, never this sort of music. And I'd never heard music in my cell save for that one time. You, I breathed, not taking my eyes from the musicians playing so skillfully that even the diners had set down their forks in the cafes nearby. You sent that music into my cell. Why? Rhysand's voice was hoarse.
Because you were breaking, and I couldn't find another way to save you.
The music swelled and built. I'd seen a palace in the sky when I'd hallucinated. A place between sunset and dawn. A house of moonstone pillars. I saw the night court. He glanced sidelong at me.
I didn't send those images to you. I didn't care.
Thank you. For everything. For what you did. Then... And now.
Even after the Weaver? After this morning with my trap for the Adder? My nostrils flared.
You ruin everything. Rhys grinned, and I didn't notice if people were staring as he slid an arm under my leg and shot us both into the sky.
I could learn to love it, I realized. The flying.
I was reading in bed, listening to the merry chatter of the toasty birch fire across the room light when I turned the page of my book and a piece of paper fell out. I took one look at the cream stationery and the handwriting and sat up straight. On it, Rhysand had written, I might be a shameless flirt,
but at least I don't have a horrible temper. You should come tend to my wounds from our squabble in the snow. I'm bruised all over, thanks to you.
Something clicked against the nightstand, and a pen rolled across the polished mahogany. Hissing, I snatched it up and scribbled, "Go lick your wounds and leave me be." The paper vanished. It was gone for a while, far longer than it should have taken to write the few words that appeared on the paper when it returned.
"I'd much rather you licked my wounds for me."
My heart pounded, faster and faster, and a strange sort of rush went through my veins as I read the sentence again and again. A challenge. I clamped my lips shut to keep from smiling as I wrote, "Lick you where, exactly?" The paper vanished before I'd even completed the final mark. His reply was a long time coming. Then,
"Wherever you want to lick me, Feyre. I'd like to start with everywhere, but I can choose if necessary."
I wrote back, "Let's hope my licking is better than yours. I remember how horrible you were at it under the mountain."
Lie. He'd licked away my tears when I'd been a moment away from shattering.
He'd done it to keep me distracted, keep me angry, because anger was better than feeling nothing, because anger and hatred were the long-lasting fuel in the endless dark of my despair, the same way that music had kept me from breaking. Lucian had come to patch me up a few times, but no one risked quite so much in keeping me not only alive, but as mentally intact as I could be, considering the circumstances. Just as he'd been doing these past few weeks, taunting and teasing me to keep the hollowness at bay. Just as he was doing now. "I was under duress," his next note read.
"If you want, I'd be more than happy to prove you wrong. I've been told I'm very, very good at licking."
I clenched my knees together and wrote back, "Good night." A heartbeat later, his note said,
"Try not to moan too loudly when you dream about me. I need my beauty rest."
I got up, chucked the letter in the burbling fire, and gave it a vulgar gesture. I could have sworn laughter rumbled down the hall. I didn't dream about Rhys. I dreamed about the adder, its claws on me, gripping me as I was punched. I dreamed about its hissing laughter and foul stench. But I slept through the night and did not wake once.
Chapter 30. Cassian might have been cocky grins and vulgarity most of the time, but in the sparring ring in a rock-carved courtyard atop the House of Wind the next afternoon, he was a stone-cold killer. And when those lethal instincts were turned on me, beneath the fighting leathers, even with the brisk temperature, my skin was slick with sweat. Each breath ravaged my throat, and my arms trembled so badly that any time I so much as tried to use my fingers, my pinky would start shaking uncontrollably. I was watching it wobble of its own accord when Cassian closed the gap between us, gripped my hand, and said,
"This is because you're hitting on the wrong knuckles. Top two, pointer and middle finger, that's where the punches should connect. Hitting here," he said, tapping a calloused finger on the already bruised bit of skin in the V between my pinky and ring finger, "will do more damage to you than to your opponent. You're lucky the adder didn't want to get into a fist fight."
We'd been going at it for an hour now, walking through the basic steps of hand-to-hand combat. And it turned out that I might have been good at hunting, at archery, but using my left side? Pathetic. I was as uncoordinated as a newborn fawn attempting to walk. Punching
and stepping with the left side of my body at once had been nearly impossible, and I'd stumbled into